on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YokeCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How you doing? Welcome back to another edition of the YokeCast podcast. Big week this week for Coyote football as they travel to South Dakota State, try to get their first win in Brookings since the year 2000. Coyotes also trying to get back into the end zone for the first time since the Hail Mary. So a lot of excitement for this week's game. Top five matchup in Brookings. We'll get a preview of the Jackrabbits with the voice of the Jacks. Tyler Merriam coming up here in just a little bit. Basketball season is coming very, very quickly. And so we are going to talk a little basketball here this week and the next couple of weeks. As we get ready for the season opener and all of that good stuff. But before we get into basketball, huge shout out to the South Dakota men's golf team. They went to Louisiana and defeated the field and took first place, a 12-team event. They won the event and just had a great weekend. They had team totals of 285, 280, and 285. They finished at 14 under on the course, 22 birdies in the final round. And South Dakota wins by six shots over Southeastern Louisiana. The rest of the top five was Texas A&M Commerce, Houston Christian, and Tennessee Martin as well. So Coyotes really had some good efforts. Logan Hammock and Max Schmidke each tied for sixth to lead the way for the Coyote men's golf team. So big shout out to them. They wrapped up their fall season, and now they'll go to work here in the in-between, you know, the interim, and then they return to action in Arizona in early February, mid-February, as well, and they'll continue their season then. So huge shout out to Coach Green and the men's golf team on their first place finish in the final event of the fall. The women's golf team wrapped up their fall season as well. Ella Greenberg finished in a tie for 15th. Ava Schroeder was tied for 19th. They were in Spartanburg, South Carolina. So now this group gets to go to work and see how they finish over the next, in the spring. That they return to action February 21st in Arizona as well. So a week after the men continue their season, the women will as well. So they'll get to work here in the off season and continue to improve their game as they get ready to close that out. Also, it is the final week of the regular season for soccer. So soccer probably needs at least a tie to make it into the Summit League Tournament. The top six go into the Summit League Tournament. You need points. Right now, South Dakota has 6 points due to one win and three ties that they have. St. Thomas is right on their heels at 4 points. And then you have Kansas City and North Dakota at 3. So the Coyotes will play two teams this week that are ahead of them in the points in Denver and Oral Roberts. A win would lock in a spot in the Summit League Tournament. But they probably are going to need at least a tie, pick up some points here down the stretch. So we'll see what happens for South Dakota. If they can find a way to get it done this week, they've got, again, two matches. They got a matchup on Thursday and a matchup on Sunday as well. And so we'll see how things go for Coyote women's soccer. They've been battling. They've been in a lot of close matches this year. Chance to solidify themselves into the Summit League tournament field. So we'll see what happens with all of that. Well, South Dakota basketball season is quickly approaching. November 4th, the opening night, it's a doubleheader. The women take on St. Louis. The men will play Southern in that doubleheader. It's a whiteout in the Sanford Coyote Sports Center. Hope you can join us on a Monday night for excitement of basketball. This week, I had a chance to catch up with Carrie Amy, the new basketball coach for Coyote women's basketball, and we got a chance to talk about their upcoming schedule, their roster, and all of it ahead of the season opener for South Dakota women's basketball. Coach, the last time we talked to you on the YokeCast podcast, you were brand new here, you're just getting settled in and all of that. How was summer and the off season and all of that as you were able to get settled in and start to acclimate yourself?
It was really good, but to be honest, it was really, really busy. There was just a lot of irons in the fire with finishing up recruiting, even for our current current roster right now, you know, camps and having our own team here and trying to get the schedule finalized. And so summer went really, really fast, and there was not a ton of relaxing, which is fine. But there's just so many details, you know, that you got to get ironed out in that first summer. So it was busy, but I think it was good for us to get some of that stuff taken care of and get settled in. Summer was great to get to know our team and spend some time learning about who they are as players. And that was really important for us moving forward as we kind of jumped into the fall here, knowing a lot more about them than we did when we took the job.
So I know it's been really busy, but have you been able to adapt a little bit to Vermilion and get a feel for the community a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, this place is great. The people here are super supportive and passionate about women's basketball and really sports in general, but great supporters of women's basketball. And one of the things I've been most impressed with is they follow and they kind of know what's going on. So a lot of the questions that they ask are much more informed than maybe some of the other places I've been in my career.
Yeah, they do keep on top of that, so they'll keep you on your toes. You've been around the team, obviously, for a while now through some off-season workouts and obviously the official start of practice as we close in on the regular season. What do you see out of this group and just kind of how it's coming together?
Well, I think it's a group that they care a lot about each other. And I think that part is really, really important in women's sports, just the chemistry part of it. They get along really well. They support each other. They're great teammates to each other. So that part of it is really, really important. I think the other part of it is that this group they're very receptive to coaching and learning and obviously what we're asking them to do might be different than what they've done before, right? And so just their willingness to listen and learn and try to do what we're asking them to do has been exceptional. You know, they're a fun group to be around. It's been a lot of fun to show up in the gym with them every day and work to get better.
Let's talk about the roster. You always start with the seniors. That's kind of the leadership group. And obviously, when our fans think about the seniors, they think Grace Larkins and Alexi Hempe. They've been a big part of this program. Sophie's a senior. Our fans are familiar with those names. You also brought in a transfer senior in Dark Roman, the transfer from New Hampshire. So there's some talent in this group. There's not a lot of seniors, but there's some talent there.
For sure. Obviously, you know, everybody, all the fans know about Grace. I think obviously in the point guard position, she's naturally someone that I, as a coach, lean on to help kind of lead the team out on the floor. She's kind of the coach on the floor. So, she leads by example. She also leads by results. You know, she's a kid that never asks anybody on her team to do anything that she isn't willing to do, which I think is really, really important. And then also, like you said, Soph, Lex, those kids have been around here a while. They take a lot of pride in being a Yote, and they take a lot of pride in kind of the culture that's been set here from a how we do things, who we are kind of thing, and that's extremely important. Lex in particular is really, really from a basketball IQ standpoint is a pretty high IQ player. She's really steady. She's obviously been around for a long time. She's in her sixth year. So, she doesn't get too rattled and doesn't get too high and too low. Just kind of is kind of a steady, calming force for us. And then Adara, obviously being new, there's a little bit of adjustment for her with that, but also she's seen a lot of college basketball. You know, as a grad transfer, she played a lot when she was at New Hampshire, so she's seen a lot of different things. And I think what we've seen with players like her is they have an ability to adapt pretty quickly because of all the college basketball that they've been exposed to for so long.
I'm sure people look at her on the roster and say, from Massachusetts, played in New Hampshire, how'd she end up at South Dakota?
Yeah, you know, it was just kind of one of those things where she was in the portal late, and we were really looking for another guard who had some experience, you know, and the others we obviously had reached out to, but with her, it seemed like she was the right fit for us. You know, gives us some extra guard depth. And also some of that experience. And that's a good combination. She has the ability to you know, stretch the floor and also does a good job of you know, getting in the paint. And, you know, she's a, like I said, she's a kid that's played a lot of college basketball. So she's been able to adapt and be flexible and you know, be coachable and kind of pick up on some things maybe a little bit quicker than an incoming freshman might.
We talk about the seniors. You look at the rest of this roster, and there's not a lot of playing experience, not a lot of game experience. You've got seven players that are either freshmen or redshirt freshmen. You add in a couple of sophomores, nine players that are either a freshman, redshirt freshman, or sophomore. So it's a really, really young roster.
For sure, yeah. And then you throw in Cassidy Carson in that group as a kid that wasn't able to play last year because of injury. So you kind of have 10 kids that haven't played here last year. So yes, for sure. There's a lot of new and a lot of learning going on right now. And you know, like I said, it's been good, but there's been times where we've had to, you know, maybe we're in a place where we were doing a lot of teaching and then we speed up and then we realize, okay, we're not maybe getting something, so we have to kind of go back and revisit it. And you know, that's just part of being new, but also having such a young crew that hasn't been exposed to very much college basketball.
People have seen your track record. You like to win a lot of places that you go. This year is interesting. How do you stay patient with a relatively young roster? Maybe it's something you've dealt with in your career, but how do you try to stay patient but also turn them into winners as the season continues to grow?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely true. I mean, you know, I've been through this before a couple of times in my career. You know, I think there was a year in Kearney where I was maybe, I think I had one senior and everybody else was a freshman and sophomore. And so been through that before. And I think, you know, you kind of have to just stay in that mindset of this is a process and what can we do today to be better than we were yesterday. And you just stay in that, okay, what's the next thing we got to fix? How do we improve? How do we get better? You know, how do we make progress? Because you're not going to get it all in one day. You know, and I think the other part of it is just helping our kids continue to understand and learn what are the things that, you know, we as a group collectively believe in that are going to help us be successful, right? And so the more and more they start to understand those various aspects and the things that we're going to really value, right, to help us be successful, the better and better they're going to get in being able to execute those things or being able to say, okay, hey, those are the things I really need to lock in on as a player.
You look at the schedule. The season starts November 4th. It's a doubleheader with the men that day. Your team takes on St. Louis, and you look up and down the schedule. You see teams like Arizona State, Nebraska, Wyoming, Air Force. You add in some mid-majors that have had a lot of success, some of them from the region. So you look at that schedule. What do you make of the challenge ahead for this group?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really good basketball teams in our non-conference schedule. It's definitely a challenging schedule that's going to prepare us well for the Summit League conference season. But, you know, early on, we're going to have to take one game at a time and really do a great job of preparation, but also, you know, be willing to say, okay, what do we need to do today, right, to try to be successful in that particular game? You know, we're going to see some really, really good players. You know, obviously Markowski from Nebraska and, you know, some players that, you know, are not just respected and considered to be good players on their team, but also within their leagues, some of the best players in the league. So, you know, it's going to be helpful. It's going to be really, really helpful for us to know early where we need to spend most of our time, you know, what are the things that we need to improve and fix and correct and make better so that we are ready for Summit League play.
Right before Thanksgiving, you take the team to Nashville, a couple of games out there. How important in your mind are tournaments like this early in the season as a group is trying to gel together?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the bonding part is fun and important. And I also think that being able to play kind of a back-to-back, you know, series of games is really important too, because physically, you know, it's something that's maybe a little bit different than what you experience, but it's also very similar to what you experience in conference play, where you maybe have a day in between, right? But those early tournament games can be really helpful in helping your team get to that place where they feel like, okay, I can, you know, play a game and then get a quick recovery and give my best again on Saturday in conference. So, you know, there's a lot of benefits to it. Like you said, the bonding part of it, the gelling together and building some chemistry, you know, in an atmosphere where it's maybe not, you know, Vermilion or you know, a place that's familiar is really important.
You're obviously new to USD and new to the Summit League, but I'm sure you tried to play catch up on the Summit League a little bit. What's your what are your thoughts right now on the state of Summit League women's basketball?
Well, I think the league in general is you know, really solid. You know, I think obviously South Dakota State has had a ton of success over the course of the last couple years in particular. But North Dakota State, ORU, some of those teams that maybe had been struggling a few years ago, are really, you know, making some headway and finished second and third respectively in the league last year. And so, you know, I'm familiar with both of those coaches, as they were Division II coaches that I either coached against or were in our region. But I feel like, you know, those top three in particular are really, really good. And then there's, you know, several other teams that, have made some good improvements. So, you know, like I said, it's a really solid league, and I think it's one of those leagues where, you know, if you don't show up and if you're not ready to play, you're probably not going to be successful that night.
People always want to know what kind of style of play a coach might bring. So what needs to be the identity of this team if it's going to be successful, or what are the characteristics of a Kerry Amy coach basketball team?
Well, there's a few things that as you coach for a long time, you start to kind of say, okay, you know, these are the areas that we feel like matter when it comes to being able to win a basketball game. And for us, you know, I think a couple of things. I think valuing the ball is really important. You know, it's really hard to score if you're not getting shots, right? So it also is really, really important to make sure that you can get your defense set. So we're going to, you know, value the ball, value possessions. We're also, you know, going to make sure that defensively we're making it hard. You know, I feel like so many games, especially when you're in a league like the Summit League, come down to maybe a few possessions. And what you're able to do in those possessions, you know, night in and night out, one of the areas you can control is defense. You know, you can kind of that's effort, that's discipline, that's preparation, you know, and so we want to make sure that we're controlling the controllables. And so defense and rebounding are a big part of that. So if we can do those things, we're going to give ourselves a chance to be successful.
Well, I know a lot of people are excited for the start of the season. Hope you are too, Coach. New era of Coyote women's basketball. Thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Good luck this year.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
That is Kerry Amy. She is the head women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. So we will continue to see how things play out for Coyote women's basketball. And excitement, again, challenging schedule for this group. When you look at it, it's amazing when you think about that with freshmen, redshirt freshmen, and sophomores make up the majority of this roster. So a couple of them are going to have to pick up their game real quick, and we'll see what we got here with women's basketball. But it's got a chance to be a season of growth for South Dakota. First-year head coach Carrie Amy, first-year head coach at the University of South Dakota. South Dakota back on the road this week as the Coyotes travel to Brookings. They'll take on South Dakota State in a top five matchup at Dana J. Dykhouse Stadium. Here to preview the Jackrabbits is the voice of the Jackrabbits, Tyler Merriam. Tyler, good to chat with you as always. I know right now this team trying to bounce back from a loss last week. What a hard-fought battle in Fargo.
That was as intense of an environment as I can recall. And obviously we've been privileged at South Dakota State to be in some pretty big football games and some fun environments, including some in the Dakota Dome and certainly when USD's come up here, but just everything. It meant so much. The national TV, the late kick, one versus two, there just was so much on that, and it was incredibly intense. You were wore out calling the game. I'm sure fans were wore out watching it, and you felt like one play was going to make the difference, and NDSU made one more play. It's why the Bison are the number one team in the country now, but a tremendous game, and now there's no rest for the weary. The Jacks don't have any time to relax. They got to turn around and play another top five team, and one that's very hungry at that.
When you look at that game last week, a lot of really close plays and obviously some tremendous defense. What did you feel like was the difference in that particular game?
Well, I thought North Dakota State did a great job of only rushing four and forcing the Jacks to go the length of the field, and there weren't many opportunities vertically in the pass game. So SDSU ran the football very successfully. But when you force the team to continue to do that time and time again and don't let them break one, and the Jacks only broke one, the Chase Mason long touchdown run, it just became very challenging. And the other thing, too, was penalties were killer. SDSU was flagged 10 times, had some very costly ones. On the opening drive, they convert a fourth and one, but it comes back because of a penalty, and then doink a field goal off the upright. So you went from feeling like the Jacks may be on a touchdown drive to open the game to getting nothing out of it. Dropped a punt snap that screwed up field position, even though Dustman did get it off. That was killer. There were just some very costly errors. On the last drive, the Jacks have a kickoff return out near the 40-yard line, commit a flag, bring it back to the 10-yard line. Those are things you just can't do in a big game, and the same deal on Saturday. Like, you can't make those mistakes and expect to beat a very good football team, particularly on the road, and the Jacks were flagged 10 times.
Mark Gronowski's still the guy. He's obviously been tremendous in his time at South Dakota State. They've added Chase Mason into the mix, playing that quarterback spot a little bit. How has that dynamic worked for those two guys? They seem like two guys that feed off each other very well.
They certainly do. Mason's learned a lot from Gronowski, and part of all the talk during the offseason was it would be Mason's job if Gronowski did pursue other opportunities. He did not. He stayed here, but he's learned a lot, and they play off each other very well. One of the things that Ryan Olsen, the offensive coordinator, and head coach Jimmy Rogers both have said is, we're trying to get the best athletes on the field. Chase Mason is one of the best athletes the Jacks have on offense, so we're going to find ways to get him involved. He's not out there 25, 30 snaps. He'll be out there, I would guess, 7 to 10 on Saturday, unless they throw a brand new wrinkle at it. But it's one of those things where Mason's on the field for maybe 15% of the Jacks' snaps. But the defense has to spend a lot of time prepping for those because they're unique plays. And so it does cause issues to the opposing defense. And we say that because SDSU has seen it with the Peyton dynamic with Miller or with the Montana State dynamic with Milan and Chambers. So even though Mason's only out there so often, it takes up a lot more real estate in defensive coordinators' minds.
You look at South Dakota State, this might be the first year that we entered a year going, who is going to catch the passes from Mark Gronowski? You know, because they've had so many good wide receivers in the past, and you know that Griffin Wilde is explosive. I think a lot of people wondered who was going to step up around him. How have they tried to develop that position?
Graham Goring, who made a couple of big catches at times a year ago, is the other top candidate there at wideout, and they both have had their moments. They both had long catches for touchdowns in the game at Oklahoma State to start the year, so they certainly are threats. NDSU did a good job of neutralizing them last week. The Jacks have typically had one or two tight ends that have stood out. This year, they've gone as deep as five at that position and rotate them a lot, so there isn't one guy that stands out. And then at running back, they've gotten them involved in the passing game too. The two Johnsons are both active in it, so there hasn't been the one go-to guy per se. You know, the Yankees dominated those catching statistics, and Hines, like you said, so it's been a little different in that regard, and I think that's been part of the, when people talk about maybe the Jacks aren't quite as crisp in the passing game as they have been in the past, some of that is you don't have two NFL caliber wideouts in the Yankees, and some of that is just trying to get a feel for everything. So it, you feel like it's close, but it's not quite there yet, and I think that still proves true to this point.
How about defensively? It seems like this group really is led by that front seven.
Front seven's very good. They're very deep up front. They don't have a standout necessarily in those top four, but they're good. The linebackers, John, have played really well. And everybody knows about Adam Bach, the All-American. But Caleb Fransel and Graham Spaulding both have had terrific seasons to date. Both are guys that have dealt with things off the field, have had injury issues. They both have been healthy, and they've succeeded. And to be quite honest, John, Dallas Beanham came in as an All-American candidate at corner. His opposite, Colby Humphrey, has been just as good. So they've been able to leave those guys on islands, and that helps that front seven because you don't have to commit extra to worrying about other things. You can kind of leave them be, and that front seven can really focus on doing what it wants to do, and they've had a lot of success because of it.
What has, when you look at this season as a whole, obviously coming off of a sensational year a year ago, a couple of national championships for this team, how have they tried to reload, right? Jimmy Rogers is still fairly young as his head coaching career at South Dakota State. They had a lot of changes. We talked about NFL caliber players that are no longer there. I mean, from the offensive line to the pass catchers to all of it. How have they tried to reload this season? Expectations amongst fans will remain very, very high, as you know, right? But yes, they have to understand it and keep building for another potential run.
Well, I think a couple of things. First off, going off your fan point there, you know, last year SDSU had one of the best teams in the history of the subdivision statistically. And so the Jacks play a top five caliber team in North Dakota State, a top five caliber team in South Dakota, and dominate those games. That's not usually how these things work. Usually those are tight games that go down to the wire like we saw last Saturday. That's what happened 2 years ago when the Jacks made their run, is they had to grind out some wins along the way, and they didn't just walk in and dominate everybody. You know, obviously that game a couple of years ago when USD came up to Brookings is a very tight game into the second half, even though the Coyotes struggled some offensively. That was very much a game. That's usually what happens. Last year was an anomaly. So this year, you knew that fans were going to have to get used to the fact that the Jacks weren't going to walk on the field and be three touchdowns better than everybody. That was just a random one-off perfect storm. That's part of this education process with the fan base, I guess you would say. But to your point, a lot of skill, it's just young skill. And so you have guys who are very talented and can make plays. They're trying to find consistency, and they're trying to get some experience. And you've seen glimpses. I mean, there have been glimpses that this team can be incredible. And then there's times that they just can't quite put it all together. And so that, to me, is the biggest thing, is if they play up to their potential, they're capable of beating everybody they play and winning the national title. And we go back to last Saturday in Fargo, John. The Jacks didn't play all that well. Some of that's a credit to North Dakota State. Some of that's the Jacks struggled at times. They led with 2 minutes to play in a rivalry game on the road in front of a sellout crowd against the number two team in the country. Most coaches would say, if we're not playing well in that situation, we're going to get drubbed. The Jacks were right in that football game and had the lead. So that tells you what they're capable of with their ceiling, but they have to reach it. We know what potential means. It means you haven't reached it yet. So that's the big thing, I think, for this team, is there's skill there. There's a lot of youth that they are incredibly high on. They just have to put it all together, and that still is a work in progress for Jimmy Rogers' squad.
What's the feeling internally about the importance of this particular game? Obviously, South Dakota is trying to still remain at the top in the hunt for a Valley Championship. South Dakota State knows that another FCS loss could start to put a potential playoff seed in question, which they've been involved in quite a bit. Is it something that they talk about internally? They start to put some of that pressure on? Or is it, you know, we've been there before, so business as usual?
I don't think it's something that gets talked about because it doesn't need to be. They all know the situation. They've been down this road. There isn't this education process of, now, you know, guys, here's the standings and here's how all this goes. They know why this is important. And as you said, I don't think this game is so important per se because it's USD. It's because you can't afford to lose another game if you're going to be in the run to win a Valley title, if you're going to be in the run to be a top four seed. Now, because it's such a talented team as USD and it's the rivalry and everything else, that ratchets it up. But regardless, how you respond from that game was going to be a huge telltale sign of the rest of the season. If SDSU can respond well, find a way to win this game, and carry on through the rest of the year undefeated, which is possible. They're a top four seed, maybe higher pending upon what happens. And even look back to a couple of years ago, NDSU was the three seed, and they actually ended up hosting in the semifinals because there was an upset. So if the Jacks can take care of business the rest of the way, all of their hopes and dreams and aspirations are within reach. As you said, the Coyotes win. Now, if the Jacks have two league losses, they're essentially eliminated from conference championship competition. It's possible, but it's very hard to believe that would be a possibility. And now, can they even get a seed? You know, they're going to be on the fringe there. If they win out and their only two losses are to top four programs outside of the FBS loss, they probably get a seed. But as we have often talked, you leave things in that gray area for a committee to decide, and you don't like that situation. USD wants to win all of its games and say, bam, we're a top two seed and it's done. That's what SDSU wants to do. Win the rest of its games, be in that top four deal, and put itself there. So it's a huge game for all those reasons and then some. And from an outsider's perspective, John, for you, for I, it's going to be a lot of fun on Saturday.
I would imagine you're anticipating a few fans to come into Jay Dykehouse Stadium on Saturday night.
We are anticipating a few, certainly not going to announce any number till they all arrive, but over 19,000 should be on hand for a sellout, and we've been very blessed to have some great crowds. And what'll be interesting, John, is typically for South Dakota State, we play night games during September, and then October and November are afternoon games. They're 2 o'clock kickoffs. With the national television situation and ESPN dictating the kickoff, 6:30, I can tell you last week, NDSU, there was a buzz and an energy about that game being at night. Some of it, again, was who you were playing, and that's part of this too. There was a buzz that Matt Larson, NDSU's AD, and their staff said they haven't seen for a regular season home game in a long time. And so the Jacks did have a home semifinal game on a Friday night last year, but for a Saturday night regular season game, this is the first time that's happened beyond September in literally since lights were put on a stadium here at SDSU. So this is a unique situation, and I'm really excited to see how much fun everybody, particularly our students, will have on Saturday night.
Well, I'm excited for it as well. I think we've got a chance to have a pretty good football game on Saturday night. Look forward to it. We'll see you on Saturday. Thanks for the time, Tyler. Appreciate you.
Can't wait.
That is Tyler Merriam. He is the play-by-play voice of the South Dakota State Jackrabbits, and the Coyotes and Jacks will play on Saturday night in a little college football action. Obviously, it's nationally televised on ESPNU. You can hear that game on the Coyote Sports Network, as you can each and every week. Our coverage gets underway at 5:30 with a 6:30 p.m. kickoff under the lights at Dana J. Dykehouse Stadium. Should be a fun Saturday night in Brookings. All right, before we wrap things up, let's take a look at what is going on in Coyote Athletics. Women's soccer against Oral Roberts, 6 o'clock on Thursday. The cross-country team will be at the Mount Marty Invitational on Thursday evening as well. And women's volleyball is back home against Denver. They'll take on the Pioneers, 7 o'clock in the Sanford Coyote Sports Center. Friday, swimming and diving, the only team in action. They're at Kansas in Lawrence, and they will compete again on Saturday in Lawrence, Kansas, starting at 10 a.m. Volleyball on Saturday's on the road. They're at Kansas City to take on the Ruse, a 1 o'clock in the afternoon start time. And, of course, football takes on South Dakota State, number 3 against number 4, 6:30 p.m., ESPNU, Coyote Sports Network. Catch all of the action. Jacks and Yotes, going to be a fun one Saturday night. Sunday, women's soccer back in action. They'll take on Denver. That gets underway at home at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. So check all of that out. That is all going on this week. It's been kind of a busy stretch. Going to keep getting busier and busier and busier for Coyote Athletics. To keep up with all of the schedules, results, stories, and more, check out GoYotes.com. It also has all of your ticket information. I hope you can catch a game, match, or meet very, very soon. That's going to do it for us this week. I'm John Thayer. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Yotecast podcast. As always, have yourself a tremendous weekend. Stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.